Lawrence Prospera is a community-driven, nonprofit organization committed to our mission of strengthening the individuals and families of Lawrence, Massachusetts through the development of thriving neighborhoods. CISU presents Hola, Honest Opinions with the Lawrence Attitude.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. We have a very special guest for you today. Police Detective for the Lawrence Police Department, Marco Ayala. Detective Ayala, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I understand you're a very busy man. So without further ado, let's start with these questions. Let's jump right in it. So can you please share with us a little bit about your family background? Where's your family from? How long have you lived in Lawrence? Stuff like that, whatever you want to share with us.
Yeah, no, my family is from Puerto Rico. My father from Comerío, my mother from Aguadillas, which is the southern part of the island. My grandfather settled here a long time ago, and some cousins of mine that came in the late 50s, my grandfather shortly thereafter. So my family background, a lot of my family were some of the first Latino settlers into Lawrence, like to come to Lawrence.
So historical.
Families, yeah. So I'm very proud of that. Those that were here then, like I look a lot like my grandfather. So there were people that recognized me through that because he was here for so long. So
wow.
A lot of our early Latino people, Dominican, Puerto Rican alike, had a lady years ago do that. So you look familiar to me. And then when she finally figured it out, she wanted to give me the shirt off her back because my grandfather, I guess, helped her out. But he had property here on Water Street. I was born and raised here, went to schools here. I attended multiple schools because we moved a lot of times in the city.
Okay, so within the city.
Within the city. I went to the Leonard. I attended the Hennessy School early on. I went to the Leonard School, the Oliver School, the Leahy School. And I graduated from the Greater Lawrence Technical High School.
Now, tell us a little bit about what inspired you to become a police officer.
I have always wanted to. I think, you know, I used to, I mean, like many little kids, I guess, you play that as a kid, cops and robbers and everybody nice, you know. And then again, positive interactions with police officers growing up. You know, there were a lot of good officers here that I was fortunate enough to have met at a young age, and kind of they kind of drew me in closer to this profession. So it's a very great profession. It's you know, I wouldn't change anything. You know, I know we've gotten beat up in the past few years, but that's okay. Because it happens. We're it's a tough profession to work. You know, anything that has authority is difficult. And teachers deal with that. You know, parents deal with that. I don't really feel it's so much everyone or people against the police. It's people that don't like authority figures. And we're the ultimate figure of authority.
They actually have and they actually have a condition. They call it... a lot of children that have struggled with authority figures, they call them the, let me see if I remember this correctly, opposite defiant disorder.
Yeah.
You're always fighting somebody that's, you know, you're always taking the opposite of whatever it is.
There's people that are like that, adults alike. There are people that just resist something just for the sake of resisting it. I've argued this with friends, with people I've grown up with, you know, with the whole police debate and all this stuff, and it's like, and I ask them for an example, they can't give me one. But they're fed this so much that it becomes believable.
Do you believe in the media out there, in the move? And this is, you know, we're getting off a little bit of the questions I have for you, but I think it's a very interesting topic that a lot of the audience that are listening to us might want to hear from a police perspective. What do you think of this whole... I don't know if you know, but I also have a residence in New York, and I don't know if you know, recently in the last 2 weeks, they murder two police officers in Harlem, and that was actually where I worked as a child protective specialist. I know exactly where that is, 131st Street. I know exactly, that was actually my zone when I was working in Harlem. And it's a very, as you know, as a police officer, patrol stops and domestic violence are allegedly the most riskiest situations that a police officer can be in.
Yes.
what do you think about what's going on with the negative propaganda? And I call it propaganda because it's a narrative that's being pushed.
It was pushed very hard.
Defund the police type of thing.
It became very politicized. And you think about this. I brought this up in discussion with close friends of mine who, you know, we disagree, but we're still friends. I'm like, when's the last time you heard of you know, quote unquote, you know, the excessive force? You don't see it on the news as much now because it's already been used. It was used by the political, you know, agenda. Like, we need to get elected. We're going to do all this. So now, what happened to it?
Yeah.
Did it miraculously just stop because people supposedly made changes? I was on a podcast for a church, for my former church in Haverhill. It's a black church predominantly. And, you know, good questions. People wanted to ask a police officer.
Yes.
And one thing I had to put out, I says, it's very easy for politicians to claim they change things. And I was like, okay, no chokeholds. We never had that. I'm in my 27th year as a police officer. I'm also a defensive tactics instructor at the Academy.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
I've never taught anybody a chokehold.
Okay. Oh,
that was never allowed. Oh, well, now they have a duty to intervene, to stop. We've had that since 1993. There's a case called Commonwealth v. Adams that existed. But it was very easy for certain politicians to claim that they created all this. A lot of it already existed.
Okay.
It's just something that happened 2,000 miles away that went bad. People all over the country started jumping on it. It's like, we didn't have those issues here in Massachusetts. And I pride myself in the city for that. I mean, I think relationships between the police department and the city and the community are a big thing.
Yes,
I think
agree.
We definitely have that here. The community is very supportive of what we do. You know, again, it's policing. You're not always going to make everyone happy.
That's true.
But the way this department's run, a lot of the people that work in this department are from this city, either grew up here or have some type of interest here. So it's they own it.
Yes.
You know, we own our city, and it's very important to have that also.
The staff, what I've noticed is that the Lawrence Police Department, the staff mirrors the community, which is, I have a degree in criminal justice, which is one of the big things that they enforce, not enforce, but they emphasize in school that, you know, police departments should mirror the community that they're that they're enforcing.
I agree with that because we're a majority minority community. We're the majority now. The Latinos here are like 80% most likely, right? But we're also one of the only, I've heard the chief say this many times, we're one of the few, if not the only, majority minority department. Like the majority of us in the department now are Latino. You know, so that's huge. And
that's
now what that does, again, maybe it makes it a little easier for us to not take those rocks being thrown at us. But it's very hard for you to claim the whole, well, you did this to me because I'm Hispano.
That's
you
right.
Know, I mean, I'm a fair complexion guy. I've had people accuse me of that until I speak Spanish. And they're like, well, you know, you don't look Spanish. I'm like, well, there's your ticket. Have a good day.
You know,
so that claim is out the door kind of.
Very quick. So what do you say with the with they try to move that idea to defund the police? And, you know, I just want to hear from your point of view. What do you think about that? Because this was really pushed in the last
election. Well, there were many sides to it, and I've had that debate also with friends, and everybody's like, you know, you got to be careful with the words you choose also. Defunding the police is a bad thing. Now, when we need more money for mental health, more money, absolutely, you need them in those areas. There's already money being thrown there, but you want more. Okay, the police department, especially in a community like ours, okay, is the wrong place to pull those funds from because the majority of our budget are salaries.
Yeah.
So you remove the budget, you remove officers. That means you have less officers patrolling these streets. I mean, we suffered a layoff here in 2010.
Oh, wow.
And I remember responding to calls, and people were upset that we were taking long. And I was like, I could only apologize. I said, look, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The way we prioritize calls, your call had to take, you know, bottom of the list. And we just had a layoff. We lost many officers and we're short-staffed.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so services will suffer. You know, crime will definitely increase because think about it. Where are the criminals going to go where there's less cops? Mm-hmm. Visibility is a big, big impact. Big impact on making sure, you know, and they've done a good job in the city with that. We have city cameras everywhere. We've hired more police officers. I mean, that's enormous. So the communities that suffer from defunding are the communities that need the police the most. And that's my opinion. I mean, I grew up here.
Yeah.
I can say that 100%. I've always, you know, I'm not saying every cop I encountered was a nice cop.
Of course.
But the majority were. You know?
Talking about cameras and equipment and, you know, something that I feel that it will help both sides, and there's different arguments to this, is the body cameras, the officers. are using, is Lawrence Police Department using?
I believe they're researching it now. They're looking for funding. The funding is the big thing.
So that's what I'm saying. That would go into, and it will protect the officer as well as the citizens, you know?
Or both of us. And
yes.
I don't know too many officers that are against it, because the reality is, and I remember reading this years back where I believe, I want to say it was the ACLU, was a big push for it. But then what happened was, yeah, okay, you may catch me doing something wrong, but whatever's on that camera we could use in court also against
your
client.
That's right.
Oh, well, it's not right. I was like, well, wait a minute. You can't have it both ways. You want to only have the camera to see what I do wrong, but we can't use what's in front of us? But if I did something wrong, you use it against me?
We'll want to, yeah.
You know, when I became a police officer, I didn't give up my rights to due process.
Right, that's right.
I have the same rights that everybody else does. Mm-hmm. So, again, it helps in that aspect, because now there have been many departments that went to cameras and they found that a lot of the complaints were unfounded, mm-hmm. because now they're going to the camera. People were accusing officers of things. So I don't know too many officers at all that really are against it, because we see it as a win. Because now the world could see exactly what we see, rather than try to believe me because you don't know me, or the officer's lying.
That's
the camera's not lying.
Yeah.
So we could go that route.
Now, have you seen a big shift from the time that you've decided to be, you know, from the time you started in the force up to now in 2022, mm-hmm. have you noticed a change in the paradigm of the community, that mentality of us versus them or them versus us? Or do you see it getting worse or getting...
Again,
what can you tell
Lawrence,
us about?
I think Lawrence, again, I can speak for my city. And, and I know I work with other officers in other communities that say the same. But Lawrence is super supportive. I mean, you're always going to have people that just don't like cops.
That's right.
They just, you know, I know that. It's the way it is, mm-hmm. you know. That's always going to exist. It's never going to go away. I just think most people appreciate having police officers. They want you there. And if you look at, you know, Hispanic community, for the most part, as blue as they may want to vote, our cultures are very conservative.
That is true.
You know, our cultures are very conservative.
That's why I'm so...
And they like law enforcement. They like to have police safety.
Yes.
I've spoken to many people here who come from Dominican Republic, you know, and even Puerto Rico, but Dominican Republic mainly, that's the bigger influx now. And they're like, no, this is what you guys should do. And they're very, like, the things they suggest are not necessarily things we can get away with here. Like, maybe at DR they do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're very pro-police, pro-safety, pro-having mm-hmm. their neighborhoods. I mean, who doesn't want their neighborhood to be safe?
That's right, yeah.
And get the riffraff out. I mean, mm-hmm. but... You know, again, we have to do it under the letter of the law and our policy. So we can't have another country's, we can't always apply another country's tactics here.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And you know, it's a very difficult job, I would have to say, overall. But I thank you so much on behalf of the community and on behalf of CISU for what you've contributed to in the community overall, because we need good officers, you know? Like you said, there's always going to be that bunch
I was a union rep for many years, and when I had these conversations with the chief at the time when there were concerns of an officer getting in trouble, a lot of times I'm like, listen, those are your one percenters. There's nothing you can do. Eventually, those people will bury themselves. They'll get themselves fired. They'll get themselves in trouble. There's nothing the union can do. But the majority of officers in this department, the vast majority, and I'm proud to walk in their footsteps now, because they're the ones answering the calls. They're the ones out there really providing that service. They're hardworking.
Yes.
We got a nice young department. They love what they do. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, I think we have the best department around. You know, I work with many others, and there's good cops all over the Commonwealth.
I agree.
But my pride is here. So
I totally...
A lot of men and women in this department that do a great job.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you heard of this statistics, but they said that they're up to like more than 10. I don't know specifically the statistics, but remember, we just started the year. It's only February 1st,
and they have
over, I'm not sure, but it's over 10 officers already being killed, and it's just the beginning of the year.
And a lot of it has become, like, before, years ago, it was morally, it wasn't so much they targeted me, it was just, you know,
random.
Not so much random, but in the nature of the performance of my duties.
Okay.
In the performance of my duties, you know, this happened. Now it's like they're targeting these cops.
Right.
You know, so I think maybe 6 months ago, I think it was last year, there was an officer, I believe it was Texas, black officer, who went home to eat.
Yeah. Yes.
And he basically got ambushed and killed outside his home. It was purposeful. It was no other reason other than he wore that uniform. Yeah. And again, having become so political.
Yes.
And some politicians took advantage of that to better themselves. My opinion is that, you know, from what I saw, it emboldened many people to get like that. And that's not a good thing.
I think history will
show that. And down the road, and this generation that's very young now, they're going to look at it and be like, wow, you know, this DA did that, or this politician did that, and look what it caused. There's a ripple effect that they leave.
There is, especially in New York City. You should see the mess they have right now. It is unbelievable. And these two officers, Officer Jason Rivera, and I only know his name really, you know, briefly because I'm Rivera as well, and then Moran is the last name of the other officer. He was in a medical coma, and then he passed away. His funeral should be this weekend or next week, I'm not sure. But they were ambushed. This person had a criminal history. He also has some mental health issues as well. So the combination of a violent history, it was not just a random criminal history. This is a violent criminal history. And he also had a machine gun. Like, this is, then it brings the other aspect of guns, you know? It's just like.
It's a touchy subject for a lot of people. I know it's a sensitive subject, but you have to remember, it's, are you doing this for the right reason? Are you letting out the right person? Because let's face it, yeah, are there innocent people that may be serving time they shouldn't? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is everybody that's serving time innocent? Absolutely not. Our system is not perfect, but it's designed better than most.
Definitely.
Something I learned early on in my law enforcement career at the academy. Now, it may not be perfect. You know, there are people that have tons of money and get away with stuff that they shouldn't. You know what I mean? I mean, we got to look at that too, poor versus rich. That affects, you know, how the outcome comes out in court sometimes. If you can hire, you know, an A-team lawyer crew, you know, you're going to be fine, right? Mm-hmm. Or you may have a better chance. But that same lady, you know, the wife of the slain officer whose funeral was this past week, she took her shot at the DA.
And I loved it.
And I respect that because now my husband's gone. You know, my children don't have their father because you chose to not do your job for political reasons. And that's a dangerous thing they're playing with because, again, people say, oh, yeah, it's a common. Listen, we know the dangers of our job. We don't need to be reminded of that.
Sure.
But to become more of a target simply because you wear a uniform, not a good feeling. And again, there are less people trying to take this job or come into this profession for that reason. People that wanted to, and then they see all of that, they're like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
Very tough, sir. I wish, you know, that we learn and from this whole experience, and hopefully we can look back at this and make some positive changes moving forward.
We could grow. I think, again, and I commend my brother and sister officers in this police department. We've grown from it, and everybody's very receptive, and they understand that change sometimes is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
As long as, you know, officers are not put in more dangerous situations. Like, you know, their safety is always first. I mean, there's changes at the state level.
Yes.
The state has the post system now. That's all fine. It's okay. A buddy of mine, one of my mentors at the state level who does a lot of the training, had done his own research. And we were, like, a number of hours trained for police officers. We're, like, top 10 in the country.
Okay.
You know, so that's pretty good. There are issues with lack of training in other areas. A lot of
the
police problems can be geographical
mm-hmm.
because some departments will just hire somebody, put them on a two-week course, and here you go, you're a police officer. It's not enough sometimes. Training is very important.
Very, very. And definitely, for sure. Now, as you can see, we can go on and on and on and on. You know, this is a very interesting topic. Maybe perhaps in the future we can have you back during the midterm election, see what the politics are using.
Yeah,
you know,
I would love it. Absolutely love it.
Just because people need to understand the importance of having good police officers, the importance of ruling out the bad ones because they also mess it up for the other good ones. You know.
Listen, I always use this example. I have older brothers. My oldest brother passed. Have younger brothers. All of us, with the exception of my youngest sister and myself, everybody else has been in and out of jail or prison. And not once did I ever hear my brothers blame the cop for what they did. So I have a whole, you know, I have the whole different approach to the whole, what's the reason? I get it. Some places, so some people have, there's a root cause that, but we're responsible for our own decisions.
Of course.
I know people that grew up in extreme poverty and with nothing, and they never turned to crime.
Yeah.
You know, again, we gotta be careful with how
of
we just
course.
Blanket things, because it becomes a crutch for some people to just say, well, it's because I was poor. Mm-hmm. I know some people personally that were like, grew up in the gutter. Never once did they commit a crime in their life. And my own brothers, who were in and out and had their interactions with the law their whole lives, you know, they're much better now, but not once did they ever say the cop was the problem. They understood what they did.
Yes.
They understood what they did. They served their time. They came out and they reformed, which, again, I'm into helping and helping people get on their feet. You need to do that.
You know what I've noticed, too, is, and I'm a mother of I have a son that's 24 years old. I've had to have that conversation with my son about, especially when he started driving, what do you do when you get pulled over by a police officer? I think we're missing the other aspect of this about telling our individuals or citizens that, and not only, but families, we need to start letting our children from a young age to respect authority.
Understand the process.
You know, like, if you, okay, you, I mean, if you don't want the ticket, you know you're holding a gun, you know you're doing this, you know, understand that you can always fight that in court. It's not the end of the world. You go do your time.
That's what I try to tell people.
It's
don't
like,
argue with the police.
Don't
officer.
Eat. Yeah.
You know,
just, sir, no,
ticket,
sir, you know.
Appeal it, you have a right to appeal it.
Yes.
You know, you got to love the whole. I mean, I've stopped cars in my career. I couldn't always tell who was the driver. You know, it's like, oh, you stopped me because I'm like, it's nighttime. I can't even see inside the car. How did I know who was driving? Black, white, I don't know. You know,
well,
that happened with the military gentleman a year or so ago where I had that debate. And one of the reasons they were pulling him over was they couldn't read the plate. He had a temporary plate. It was inside the vehicle, which was tinted. Well, and then he wouldn't stop for like a mile and a half. And then, everybody's quick to say, it's because he was black.
Yes.
But they couldn't see inside the car.
And
they couldn't run the plate, so how did they know?
Yeah.
You know, and of course, the media will show only certain things. There's a small clip at the end of it when they're actually having conversation with the gentleman. And the officer was very polite, and the gentleman was very calm, and it's like, hey, I'm sorry. He's like, I know your people are going through a lot of stuff, and so are we, and that's not why we stopped. You know, this is what happened.
Yeah.
Kind of explaining to the guy. But they only show certain things to get people fueled up.
And I think that's another issue we have, and we're not holding politics accountable for what they're saying, especially during politic period times, and not holding the media accountable.
It's a win-win for lawmakers.
Yes.
And I said this at the church podcast also, was because people ask some questions about why we do A, B, and C, why do we do this? And again, we have discretion. Mm-hmm. The officer's empowered. We're given a lot of authority. But we're also paid to do a job.
That's right.
And so you go out, you're enforcing some law. Again, we don't write the laws. You know, if you have an issue with specific laws that are being enforced in the community, then who do you reach out to? Your lawmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You explain to them that it's an unfair law, that you don't like it, and they can push for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's win-win for people who make the laws, because they're like, again, I use, you know, see with the mask, I have the mask.
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
God,
initially,
yeah.
And our mayor at the time didn't do that. We thought he would have, but it's like,
yes.
Oh, there's a $300 fine, and you got to, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm now, who's charged with enforcing that? Me. So now I go to you, ma'am, you need to put your mask on.
Yeah.
So now you're like, whatever, get the hell out of here. You start, now it'd be go south, where maybe I end up arresting you.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a struggle, go south. And then that same person who enacted this law says, well, the officer was out of line. Well, time out. I wouldn't have been there had you not made me go out and do that. You created that law.
Yes.
And again, we didn't do that here. You know, we had some patrols. We would just basically educate people about it. And we really not, I think maybe one person got a fine. But that was the only thing. Maybe one person the whole time. But again, be careful, because you're going to hate me for enforcing it. But I wasn't the one. Orders come downhill.
Yeah.
If the lawmaker makes it, we're told we have to enforce it. And that's it. And if I don't do my job, then I could get in trouble for that. So it's
that's right. So
if it works well, say it worked well,
mm-hmm.
politician says, yes, this is what I did. But if it goes south, they point the fingers at us.
That's true.
So people just need to be wary of that, be aware of the all those things and how things work. So that way you're not quick to automatically say it was the officer.
Yes.
I'm all about educating the public. I think, you know, we're not a secret society. I think the public should understand what our use of force is, why we use force, for what reasons. Because if you better understand that and you see something,
mm-hmm.
you're going to go into it looking at, wow, this is everything the officer was taught and how he's taught to deal with it. And this is everything that person did. So the officer was right with what he did based on this. Rather than be blind to what is going on and all you see is the blue uniform, being aggressive with a person who's trying to arrest, and that's all you care about.
Yes, yeah.
So I think if the public understands us a little better, what it is we do, what we're empowered to do, they'll also see the whole picture.
I like that. I think I think it's very important what you just said about educating the public.
Absolutely.
Definitely is something that they need to look into, educating the public, going into schools, mm-hmm. teaching the kids, because right now the mentality is we hate the police.
Yeah.
And it's no bueno right now.
We have a Citizens Academy here that we run every year. Abed Cono organizes it now. We had it years back. It died out. He restarted it. And you bring in, you know, community members that want to go through it. And I think it's like a two-week thing, but every day or every evening, somebody goes in and discusses a certain topic. You'll have a use of force night. You'll have a defensive tactics night.
Yes.
You know, you'll have like a lot of aspects kind of educate you exactly what is it that my police officers do.
Mm-hmm.
What's the officer's job? And again, you're not going to be certified in 2 weeks. It's just the clip notes. But you leave with a better understanding of what it is like for that person, mm-hmm. that officer, either he or she, in their shoes.
Yes.
So that's education is important.
Very much. I think that would help if they start focusing on educating the public.
I know you guys had Councilor Payano here recently, and he's been a great supporter of the police department.
Yes.
He's always been a person. I commend him for this every time because he wants to know. He's like, mm-hmm. you know, we did an airsoft training, an active shooter training, and he was a counselor at the time.
That's
the mayor
scary.
Was a counselor at the time. They all came and partook. So we put him through.
That.
We put a mask on.
Yes.
And, you know, that you gain a different respect for.
That's right.
You know, and he had posted a photo, and I believe it's a cousin of his who's also an officer somewhere, commented on his photo, was like, hey, I'm glad you see from the other perspective.
Yes.
Because now you have a mask on. They're not real bullets, but you're getting, you know, you're going in. It's a whole different world.
Oh, my God.
And,
I'm telling you.
So he's good at that. The mayor was good at that. They came through. They want to see that side of it. And if you see that side of it a little bit, you could understand, wow, that's chaotic. And this was these were just plastic little pellets.
And they don't understand that every time you put that uniform, you're risking your life, that you might not come home. They don't understand that.
Yeah.
I only understand it because I was in the police academy in New York City. Not in New York City, I'm sorry, Nassau County Police Department. It's in the top. However, I left.
Good money out there, by the way.
Yeah, top pay is $108,000, and that was, you know, a motivation, but it was not the reason.
Cost of living is a lot there. Though.
And they were going, you know, they warned us that the times were going to change going in there. And I saw it was 183 students. That was the first recruit class that they brought in from a long time because of budget reasons. But I saw a few that were not good and actually scary because I saw things that were not comfortable. Can't discuss them here. However, I saw the good of the other. I would say 95% of them are willing to give their life, including myself, for that badge. You know, for that badge, but for their community.
Yeah.
It was amazing for me
they
to see that.
About it.
So I totally understand it, and I could never turn my back on them. You know, I can never.
The high majority.
Yeah.
And do this job with honor, respect, and again, something I'll never forget. And I'm a community kid. I you know, my father was a businessman here, always involved in community stuff. So was my grandfather also, and you know, you work with the people. You know, you talk to them, and people know you. They'll it makes your job a little easier at times because
yes.
they cooperate better.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's you know high number. I mean, it's 95% plus. They do it with honor. They do it with integrity.
Definitely.
And
definitely.
You know, again, you got to remember something. I always like to remind people of. Underneath that uniform, I'm still a human being.
That's right.
That female officer is still a human being. That means we have human being problems. People have problems at home. Problems with their children. They're normal people.
Yeah.
The same as everybody we get called to help. So think of how difficult that can be. A person comes in, you know, maybe things are going rough at home, but they come in to do their job. Now they got to go tackle the community's problems. And
yes.
we're human. And,
yes.
and some of us reach a breaking point. Doesn't
that's
excuse
right.
it if we do something way out of line, but that's also something that's happening a lot in our profession now where you have peer support, you have more mental health options for police officers. Because they deal with a lot of stress.
Yes.
And before it was nothing. You know, you go, I mean, oh yeah, a guy got killed, he got shot in the head, or we saw a guy with his head hanging, or whatever. You just go back to work. There was no, you go home with that.
You had no to react.
We're all different. Yeah. Some of us were able to kind of, okay, yeah. You can swallow that one, be like, well, and fine, it didn't affect you that hard. But some others, it may affect them. Maybe they have a past experience with a family member, somebody they loved, and it may have ignited something.
Yes.
So again, the profession's taken a good turn in that direction as far as the mental health part for police officers. And again, nobody's asking for special treatment, but just be attentive of those needs they may have. And the community has to be on that too. I think, you know, the reform did that a lot too, but police departments were doing it. We already had it underway before reform, you know, just having people available to speak to the officer post-incident.
You know, instead of the defunding the police, they should do community. I was big into community policing. I have a master's in criminal justice from John Jay College in New York City. That used to be the old academy from the NYPD. I have mentors in the NYPD department and out of the department. And community policing is the future, I feel. Instead of defunding the police, it should be geared to community policing, you know, because like you said earlier, the relationship between the residents and the police can make a big difference between what's going on right now. I think we need to bring it back to that, you know. And
that's important everywhere. I teach a lot at the academy. You know, I'm fortunate enough, again, to have been raised in a family who had businesses. We did a lot of community stuff. People knew me. But also, I encourage officers from other towns and cities that I run to the academy. If you don't know your community that well, then get out of your car and get to know them a little bit.
Yes.
You'll find your job becomes easier sometimes where they have a rapport with you. They're like, hey, officer so-and-so, how you doing? Listen, can I talk to you about something? Like, they'll confide in you a little more. And community policing is definitely the approach. And I think a lot of our younger officers come with that already.
Yes.
They kind of have that, you know, the community kids, they know people here. So that rapport and that established relationship they already have in the community is a huge plus.
I think it will help a lot moving forward, and that's something that you're in that position to push it. And I think Laura sees that already. I see it myself as I drive around. And
I mean, I've gone on radio shows to translate for the chief before, and man, people call in, and the radio hosts are real good about, you know, not letting us get ambushed, but the chief is there with it. They're going to answer questions. But people calling in always to commend the officers that are doing their jobs on the street.
Yes.
You know, this officer responded, he did a great job, or she did a great job. Mm-hmm. They're overall pleased with how they're receiving their service. So that's something we're proud of.
Definitely, and I think the media should push stuff more rather than the other, or maybe they should balance it out, you know?
Yeah. They won't highlight those things.
No, they won't, because it's not what, it doesn't fit their narrative, you know?
Yeah.
And again, you know, I feel like we have a monopoly with the media.
And it happens in other communities. I mean, I've seen things from people in Baltimore. I've seen people, you know, I remember even, I use this often, Tupac said it in an interview.
Ooh, tell me.
No, he did. He was like, he was basically like speaking about protection. He's like, you know, he's like, I'm in the hood. He's like basically saying, yeah, we want cops there. They just don't want to be, they want to be policed respectfully, you know, that neighborhood. He's like, I live right across the street from the killers. Of course I want my protection.
That's right.
So those communities that some politicians feel we need to take the police officers out of
are the ones being targeted.
Will suffer the most. Because the people that live there, the good citizens that live there want police officers.
That's
and
right.
I get it. You know, I think, yeah, the public should have some input as to what it is they need in those communities. You know,
so
we serve you at the end of the day. So, hey, listen, we'd like this, we'd like that. And that way the head of department, wherever it is, can say, listen, this is what we can do. And this is what we can't do. So we could definitely do this for you. We'll go in there. We're here to serve the community at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So whatever the law is within the law we can do, we will do. Most police departments do that.
Yeah. One last question in this and we'll move over.
Yeah, no, we'll
no, but you see how much of an interesting topic this is. Yeah. What do you think of the mash and grab thing going on right now? They're smashing into stores and stealing.
Again, it's
And you can't do nothing about it.
This is my personal opinion.
Well, the police probably can, but the average person can.
This is my personal opinion on this. Is just, again, many of these perpetrators feel emboldened.
Victims.
They feel emboldened by the happenings of society. Like, whatever is being pumped out, whatever narrative is out there, they're feeling, well, I could get away with it because my complexion is darker. They're going to say, you know, it's because, no. It's you got to be careful. You're giving people this this, not saying that's the entire reason, but some people are like, oh, the hell with it. They're not even holding us for bail anymore. I can get out. Right. If I get arrested, I get out. Because a lot of places have changed their bail reform.
Yes.
Which, again, I agree. I think some bail sets were excessive for some crimes. But, man, they do this across the board. You got to be careful. You're letting out people with a record, people that have been offenders, and you're just like, well, you know, because we're doing reform, we got to let them out. And they go and reoffend.
Immediately, too.
I was talking about this recently. My one of my younger brothers, who was in prison a long time, was up for parole, so naturally we go. But the news was there. This was right after the state parole board, that the guy who killed a cop in Waltham some years ago.
Okay,
that guy was released. So, of course, the state parole board was under scrutiny. And I looked at my older brother, who was sitting there waiting, and I'm like, I don't think they're going to let him out. He's not going to get parole. Mm-hmm. Not after what happened.
Yeah.
You know, so, and you can't just release everybody. You gotta, they have to come up with a better excuse than just saying, well, the bail system's all messed up.
Yeah.
Okay? Just have whoever's applying it be very cognizant of what's going on. You know, who is this person and should I release them?
Especially violent crimes, you know. But I think we're going to see more of that, and that's going to be evolving as we, you know, as we go in the future. It's wild in the West right now in California and New York City as well. The stores, I think,
because they went really hard with it.
Yes,
they went like, we're going all the way. That's something you should have done gradually. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to make that change, that's not a rip the Band-Aid off and we fixed it.
Yeah.
No, you created more problems. It's starting to show.
And we're good. Yes.
It's starting to show that what you try, this little experiment, is affecting a lot more people.
Immediately, too. It's not, you know, you're seeing the effects immediately. So
let's move on because we'll stay on that. What's
the
next question?
So top three people that have influenced you over your lifetime.
Oh, well, number one, my father.
Okay.
Again, I can't help but think of him in a lot of things because I remember how he was. And when I run across people that know him, I genuinely love the guy. You see the impact he had on people. He was a big influencer in my life and how I go about things. He was very helpful to people. He's always outgoing. I ran across a Haitian gentleman some years ago. He used to go to one of my father's businesses. And he knew my dad had passed. And he's like, and he just looked at me. He's like, you remember me? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, man, he's like, your father, he was such a community guy. And other people that run into me, and you know, they'll say hi to me, but they're like, they always bring up my dad. And he had that impact on me also.
Okay.
He was a big influence in my life. I made my mistakes, but he was always, you know, strict, but loving.
Love that.
More loving than strict, because my mom was the one that handed down the whoopings. You know, she was the disciplinarian.
Really?
She was. Whenever he had to step in, it was something very serious. But
okay.
She was constantly, you know, she was the prison guard watching us. It's like, don't step out of line.
Yes. No. So only one you have?
No, well, moving forward, again, my father, number one. Influences as far as my police career. Early on, he retired as a captain. He was a friend of the family. And again, I met him he was working details at my father's club at the time, was Captain Kelly. You know, he was eventually well-known by a lot of the Hispanic population here from working in the 80s in Scorpio. So he again, great influence. And also, like, I had, you know, when I speak to kids that want to pursue it, it's nice. I get the whole part of seeing somebody who looks like yours from your neighborhood, from your area. And seeing the Latino officers here at the time, that were very few. Even when I got on, we were still a few. But before that, there was like, you know, a handful of them. And then those guys were always, you know, Melix Bonilla, Richard Brooks. You know, there were plenty of guys there that you're like, oh, this guy's Spanish, you know? You know, he's little mio, you know, he's one of my people. You know, and I remember I was telling this story the other day. I didn't even know I got the job or that I was hired. I was mopping the floor at my dad's place on Park Street, and Melix Bonilla comes in. Congratulations. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, you got it. I was like, I don't even have a letter. Nobody's told me anything. What do you mean?
Uh-huh.
But he knew me. He knew me since I was a kid. So those are people that influenced me when it came to my profession and wanting to be in this. That would be. But my dad, no, mostly. You know what I mean?
Yes. No, my old man was
This concludes part one of two of our interview with Police Detective Marco Ayala.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Lawrence Prospera and is recorded in the multimedia room at the Sisu Center. Nuria Rivera is our host and Paul Thompson, our engineer and director, with assistance provided by young adults at the Sisu Center. Technical support provided by Tony Schumann. Our producer is Paul Heithaus. Executive producers are Jay Bartosik, Ralph Guerrero, and the Lawrence Prospera Board of Directors. Thanks to the generous support of the City of Lawrence, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Executive Office of Health and Human Services, and the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Thank you to the New Balance Foundation, the Filene's Foundation, the United Way, the Nordson Foundation, and the Essex County Community Foundation. And a big thank you and shout out to the Maximus Foundation. Without their support, this podcast would not be possible. And lastly, a very special thanks to our guest for sharing their stories with us today.